You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. He is still living out his afterlife after Damian Lillard murdered him the other night. I am here. So basically, the way tonight's show is going to work out, I am going to talk briefly about the game against the Orlando Magic, and then I'm going to throw it to a conversation that I had with Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, and we talk some bigger picture stuff. I like talking to more national media on some topics because we can be kind of isolated in our Lakers coverage bubble, and getting a vibe for what people are saying across the league is kind of useful. So that's what we're going to do on the second and third segments of the show. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. You can follow me on Twitter, at Anthony Irwin LA. Let's go ahead and get to, I would call it an entertaining game, but that would be a lie. It was entertaining for the wrong reasons, I would say. I'll put it that way. It was kind of a ragged game. My wife came down and she sat down after a little while, she sat down and watched the second half of the game with me, and she asked, well, how's it going? And I said, well, it's one bad team and one okay team that isn't playing up to their level. And what you get is a kind of ugly, ragged game. And once again, the Lakers forfeit another late double-digit lead in kind of gross fashion. And it's only two games, so I think it's still too early to call it a trend at this point. If it happens again, then you really got to start kind of looking into it. But I did have some notes about the game itself. So Randle did not play down the stretch. Luke Walton decided instead to go with Brook Lopez, which to me was fine. Frankly, I thought Randle was trying a little too hard to go at Aaron Gordon. That was this weird thing that started early on in the game, and frankly, it came off a little selfish, to put it, you know, one way. Maybe it's just a friendly competition. I don't know if the two guys are friends. I know that Gordon was taken ahead of Randle, and both of those guys are going to be free agents this year, so maybe there might be some competition there for some of that. But it was really odd. Right from the get-go, you had two guys really kind of going at each other. The refs warned them at one point about, you know, the talking crap and slapping hands off of each other. All that. It was kind of weird, and Gordon got the better of him. Now, Walton did say that Randle was feeling a little under the weather, and he said that played into his decision to go with Lopez down the stretch. But Randle, this wasn't one of his better games. He does finish with a double-double, but he finishes with 12 points on 11 field goal attempts, while Aaron Gordon finishes with 28 points, going 4-6 from three. So if Randle was taking this as some kind of like head-to-head battle, that one wasn't particularly close. The other thing that I noticed, with Brook Lopez was Stu Lance being livid after the game about Brook Lopez playing 35 minutes and not getting a rebound. That was pretty funny. He at one point yelled out as they were kind of like sending it off to Spectrum's postgame show that that he had as many rebounds as Brook Lopez. So that was pretty phenomenal. I want to really quickly focus on what might be going on late in these games. And it reminds me a lot. Now, it's a different kind of this kind of vibe, but it reminds me a lot of when Kobe was playing with the Lakers, and a lot of the guys would just kind of get out of the way and let him go to work. And on some nights it was great. On other nights it was not. And this is kind of what it felt like watching Isaiah Thomas the last two games. And I don't think Thomas would be in there if Ingram was healthy, or maybe even if Hart was healthy. So, but what I kind of see there is Thomas is handling the offense and all of the pick and rolls, and it works until it doesn't. And then when it doesn't, the Lakers go on these stretches where they stop scoring. And when you're playing that late in the game and the team that you're playing against is down double digits, they start trying to beat you with haymakers. And against Portland, Damian Lillard just went nuclear and was able to beat the Lakers with haymakers. Against the Orlando Magic, they were able to get themselves back into the game because they played at a higher pace while the Lakers couldn't score, while they were turning the ball over or shooting threes that led to long rebounds. And so if we were to look for reasons behind these late leads, I think it's that they're trying to play through Thomas a little too much late, and you know, still trying to get used to playing with Thomas might be causing some issues there. I personally would like it if they spread the wealth a little bit more, and use some Lonzo pick and roll or dribble handoff stuff, or went to Lopez in the mid post with, or you know, use Lopez if they are going to be in the game with some of those dribble handoffs and let him go to work, especially on a night where he was feeling it the way he was tonight. I just think you run into some issues when you rely too heavily on Isaiah Thomas at this stage of his career and given where his health is. Beyond that, a win is a win is a win. The Lakers get back into the win column. They have now won, what is it, 5 of 6. So, you know, all things considered, while there are some gripes to make, you win. You want to, you know, the Lakers win a game against Orlando, and yes, Orlando is not a good team, and they are probably openly trying to tank. Murray Space didn't play tonight, and I'm not saying that he is the reason that they are tanking or whatever, but the Lakers win a game where they don't have Ingram and they don't have Hart, and you know, you take any win that however you can get it in that kind of situation. Enough of me rambling, though. I'm going to send it off to the conversation I had with Tim. Again, a really fun one. He had been on our show a couple times last year. For whatever reason, this year the schedules haven't quite worked out. But he's a popular guest. Enjoy that conversation, and we'll be back at it again tomorrow. Have a good day, everybody. All right, I'm joined by Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post. Tim has been on the show a couple times before, and it had been way too long since we had him back on, especially this season. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I besides forgetting where you write, I'm off to a tremendous start this morning. First and foremost, this season has been really interesting from the standpoint of all, you know, since the Warriors have kind of come together, there's been this idea that, you know, they are unbeatable no matter what. And then the Rockets kind of come out of nowhere. And I kind of wanted to ask you this from this perspective, because you've been focused on the Warriors. You're here on the West Coast. And does the Warrior or does the Rockets rise give other teams hope?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's really not many other teams that are built like the Rockets either, right? I mean, you're looking at a team that maybe have the two best offenses in the history of the NBA. You know, the Rockets have 48 minutes of Hall of Fame point guard play in Chris Paul and James Harden. They've got a deep, versatile roster of supporting players around them. They've got an emerging, you know, really good young big man in Clint Capella. I mean, they have a ton of weapons. So, I don't think it really gives anybody else a lot of hope other than that, you know, now there's just two teams that are way better than everybody else. You know, I mean, I don't really think that it's changed the calculus for Golden State where, you know, those four, as long as those four guys are healthy and in their prime, I think they're going to win pretty handily in the playoffs. But, you know, I think Houston's pretty clearly made itself the second best team in the league.
The reason I ask this is because, you know, if you would have told me two, three years ago that the Rockets would be a legitimate contender? Well, do you consider the Rockets a legitimate contender with the Warriors?
Well, I mean, before you even get into that, I think you have to remember that, you know, for the past 3 years, I mean, the Rockets struggled, you know, the Rockets struggled the 1 year before they got rid of Dwight Howard, when I think they finished eighth and lost the Warriors in the first round in 2016. But I mean, remember, they were second in the conference 3 years ago. They were second in the conference, second or third. No, they were third behind the Spurs last year. I mean, this is a team that has been in the at the top of the West for a while now. And then added Chris Paul. So, you know, to me, they've been kind of in this echelon for a while, but they obviously took a step forward with Chris Paul this year. And I mean, look, I think you have to consider them a contender because they're the second best team in the league. And I do think that the way they play, in particular, the amount of variance they have, the amount of threes they can make, does allow them the, you know, at least the chance of beating Golden State in the series. But I think that chance is far lower than a lot of people do. And I think for no other reason than you look at the records they have, the Rockets have been playing, you know, balls to the wall all season to have the best record in the league and have home court in the playoffs. They are a half game better than Golden State, which has played admittedly at about 70% for the vast majority of the season. Right.
Yep.
So, I mean, that to me, that kind of sums up the difference between the two teams, where the Rockets are really good. And if it breaks right, the Rockets, I think, could be Golden State, but I think Golden State at its best is still far better than everybody else.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. The reason I'm starting here is because, you know, a lot of the critique on the superstar plan that that Magic and Pelinka have kind of etched their name on is that they, you know, it doesn't matter which superstars you get, you're still not going to beat Golden State. And what I would say to that is, well, one, that doesn't like if you're just not going to continue to make your team better because there's another good team in the NBA, then I would kind of stop people from thinking that. But two, I think you know, with as the Rockets showed, if you just make consistent and marked improvement over a few years, and then just add the right piece at the right time, I think you can kind of strike gold here. And now, like you said, I still would have Golden State as the favorite by quite a bit, but I don't think Houston fans are sitting here feeling sorry for themselves that they've been able to watch the basketball that they've watched this year. And so to turn this to the Lakers thing, I would say their number one priority this year has been to show enough progress so that when they sit in a meeting with superstars, whether it be this year or next offseason, they could say, look, this is the progress that we've made. Here's the case that we could make for why you should come here. Would you, from where you're sitting, do you think the Lakers have made enough progress to do that?
I mean, I think it depends. I'm just not overall sure, you know, where they're going to stand for guys this summer. I mean, look, some of their young guys have taken, you know, some steps forward. You know, Ingram has played better. Lonzo, you know, has played better lately. I don't think it's a coincidence he's played better with the circus halfway around the world, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, Kyle Kuzma has, I think, pretty predictably taken a realistic step back to what he probably always was going to be, which is a nice player that could come in and score off the bench, but just not a guy that's, you know, probably going to be a all-star level player like he, you know, was looking like when for, you know, an 8-month stretch, he was shooting 45% from three when he never made more than 30 in college. You know, so look, their young guys have taken nice steps forward, and I think that they have, you know, put themselves in a position to at least be a factor this summer. But at the end of the day, the thing that still gives me pause about their situation is I don't see the Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Kristaps Porzingis, even Donovan Mitchell, like that type of star on their team, right? Just while you were talking, I saw ESPN put out their, you know, their top 25 players under 25, and Ingram was 16th, and Ball was, I think, tied for 18th, and Kuzma was tied for 23rd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, those guys have been nice, and they're nice players, And I think they're going to be good players, but is that enough to convince a couple of stars to go play there now? I'm not sure. And I think if it's strictly a decision based on winning, I think it will be hard to convince guys to go there this summer, given where that team would be in the West if you add one or even two guys. But if it's a combination of winning and the potential for stuff down the road, then you might have an easier time. So I guess the short answer is it's an incomplete answer because, you know, there is still a month left in the season for these guys to keep playing and to see where things are. But, you know, I think more than anything, the Lakers this summer need to be fine with striking out. And what they can't do is what they did a couple summers ago, which is, well, we're not going to sign any great players, so let's just sign somebody. You know, I think if they approach this, you know, the way they did last summer, which is if we get, you know, Paul George and LeBron, like we're not too great, or we get one of them, great. If not, let's, you know, sign a couple more KCPs and wait a year and come back in 2019 and do it again, and let our young players grow another year. I think if they do that, that's not a bad outcome at all, and I think is a very rational and smart way to approach things. And to me, I think that more than anything, that's the way they have to approach the season, is being willing to swing for the fences. And if they don't, being fine just, you know, making contact and waiting, you know, fouling a ball off and waiting for their next chance. Because, you know, if they do keep these young guys playing on the same path they're on now, they are going to be in a position to go sign guys in the future. And, you know, I think that is the thing they need to keep their eye on, not, oh, if we don't get a guy this summer, our plan is over and we have to, you know, blow things up and just get whoever we can get.
How did you receive the report that Magic and Pelinka were ready to, if not fine with, kick their cap space down a year down the road to be able to talk to a Kawhi Leonard or talk to a Klay Thompson?
I mean, to me, what I would say is that it was them acknowledging the reality of the situation, right? That they probably have gotten some feelers that they don't feel great about where the summer's at. I think a lot of people around the league are pretty confident Paul George is going to stay in Oklahoma City. You know, maybe that changes over the way the next month goes. But, you know, say they miss the playoffs or something, maybe that will change. But, you know, kind of the prevailing opinion for a while is that Paul George is going to stay there probably on a short-term deal for at least a year. And, you know, LeBron is kind of a black box, but I think people generally think that, you know, it's more likely than not he sticks around for a year, even though it's kind of hard to tell what's going to happen there. So, look, and DeMarcus Cousins, who was their fallback guy, blew his Achilles out, right? So at that point, you kind of look around the marketplace and say, all right, well, there's not really anybody else to sign. So if we can sign Paul George and LeBron, the only two stars this summer, great. If we can't, then we're going to wait a year. And I think it was them trying to reset expectations with their fans because, you know, look, they basically are, you know, next summer there's what, 8, 7, 8, 9 all-stars on the market. This summer there's 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for them, it's really just a matter of resetting expectations for their fans and going, hey, listen, this might not work out the way you hope, but if it doesn't, it's not a failure, because we are going to wait and go after guys next summer instead, which, you know, I think they spent so much time hyping up this year. I think they wanted to try to get out in front of trying to get out in front of that and kind of, you know, ride people off thinking that they failed if they don't get those guys.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned the next couple months, because over the last 2 months, the Lakers are 17-8 and the Thunder are 15-12. They really miss Robertson, the Thunder do.
Yes, a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy the impact that he makes on that team. My one thing that I would say about George is that I can't help but feel like the Thunder are kind of tapped out. Like they are who they are going to be. And if I'm Paul George, I'm, you know, and he's somebody who reportedly was hell-bent on being a Laker last year. And if you're asking about ceilings, I would make the case that even though OKC has Russell Westbrook and has Carmelo Anthony, that I would kind of think that the Lakers, because they have so much flexibility, might have a higher ceiling. And like the thing with the kids is that I mean Magic seems perfectly willing to move any of these young pieces for help that Paul George is ready to bring over. And if that's the case, and Paul George has his choice of teammate, and that they would be able to acquire using some of these kids. I don't know if somebody who already wanted to be in LA and OKC seems to have topped out at maybe like a 3 or a 4 seed. I'd be hard pressed if I were him to look at the two situations and lean heavily either way. I think it's going to be a tough call for him this upcoming offseason. Am I reaching there?
I don't know if you're reaching. I mean, I don't think it'd be an easy call for him, but I mean, I also do think the fact you're kind of underestimating the fact that Russell Westbrook was the MVP of the league last year, and the guys on the Lakers have combined to win about, 23 games a year for the last 4 years. So, look, I think when people look back at what Paul was saying last summer, he was saying if I am in Indiana, I'm going to go sign with the Lakers, right? That's a different calculus than I got traded to a team with Carmelo Anthony and Russell Westbrook on it. So, I think the Lakers are going to have a compelling sales pitch for him, and it wouldn't stun me if he signs with the Lakers, especially if things do go sideways here in the last month of the season, which they very well could. You mentioned how big of a loss Robertson is for them. He's really been huge. Their offense is basically the same with or without him. Their defense is 4 point worse. So they've gone from being a team on pace to win 50 games to a team that's a 500 team. And, that's with a schedule where, 13 of the final 17 games after last night are against teams with winning records. And, they could be in a position where they do struggle to make the playoffs. But, I do think that the Lakers have a compelling sales pitch, but, the Thunder still do have, the reigning MVP of the league and, a guy in Carmelo that players, really respect and that Paul's tight with. So, guys want to win, and guys in this position want to win. And, even though the Lakers have played well here lately, it remains to be seen if that's going to be enough to convince him that they're ready to win now.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. I'm gonna shift the conversation over to Lonzo Ball, who you kind of alluded to. LeVar goes to Lithuania and Lonzo starts playing better, and that's kind of an interesting correlation that it should be made at all times. But from where you're sitting and the stuff that you've heard, kind of bigger picture, how does the league perceive Lonzo? Because it's been interesting to me to watch, outside of Patrick Beverley on opening night, players that are going against Lonzo tend to have something nice to say about or to him after games, and there's the Dwayne Wade waxed poetic about him for about 3 tweets worth of quote. And it's been kind of interesting to see the respect that Lonzo has gotten from some of the guys in the league. But from where you're sitting, what are people saying about Lonzo?
I mean, I think that Lonzo is kind of in the same place he was a year ago, where the people who believe in him believe in his intangibles and his defensive ability and his passing and the way he's kind of led to winning everywhere he's been in his life. And the people on the other side say he's not super athletic. His jump shot is a mess. It's not clear that he has, the personality to really take over a team and be a star. I think that plus that's not even getting into the off court stuff that people don't want to deal with. So I think the case for and against Lonzo really hasn't changed. It's just a matter of, what your view of him is and what you think he can do. But as opposed to saying, well, this has dramatically changed one way or the other. I think otherwise it's largely been the same case all the way through. And even though he's played better lately, I don't think that's really changed anything.
That's interesting. Well, it's funny to hear that. I feel like with Lonzo, I mean, this is basically how all rookies are kind of covered, that people kind of take their – they plant their flag on whether they think somebody's going to be good or not and wait for their bias to be confirmed. And it was kind of funny to watch it with Lonzo, where early on when he couldn't throw a pea in the ocean, there was the, you know, the people on the hill of he wasn't going to be good were super loud. And the people, you know, basically Laker fans, were sitting there licking their wounds. And now the other way, when Lonzo comes out and starts shooting better and the Lakers start playing better as a whole, you have the reluctant, like, well, yeah, sure, fine. And from the people on the first hill and the people on the Lakers hill are sitting here. Like, for me personally, when I'm watching him play, it's like, okay, just please keep this up. It's not even a matter of, like, pounding our chests or puffing our chest out. It's just like, please don't go back to not being able to throw a pea in the ocean. It's the optimism with him, mostly because, like you said, the Lakers had won, like, 30 games in the last 2 years. The optimism with him has been kind of jaded because the Lakers haven't had very many good things over the last couple of years. I'll end on this, because, you know, the young core, you know, whether it's Lonzo or Ingram or Kuzma or Randall, what have you.
Right.
To me, a huge part of the Lakers, you know, quote unquote young core is Luke Walton. You spend a bunch of time, obviously, with the Warriors, and like, how does somebody like Steve Kerr watch from afar what Luke Walton is doing, and what kind of things are you hearing about how Luke Walton is perceived across the league?
Oh, man, I think he's really well received. I think it's hard. I mean, the Lakers have gotten, you know, their young guys have gotten better. They play defense. They play hard. I think that Luke, obviously it's been a chaotic situation. He's kind of given them some stability. I mean, I think people around the league are very impressed with him and think he's a really good young coach. And, I think of all the things going on with the Lakers, he's one of the brighter spots. The fact that he is, you know, a guy that can handle the media there well, he gets what it means to be a Laker and what it means to be a Laker on a really good team there, and the responsibilities that come with that. And I think he has the respect of the players because of his playing career and the career he had and who he played with and the respect of, you know, the star level players he played with that he has. I mean, there's a lot to like about Luke, and I think the Lakers will be well served to have him, you know, on the sidelines for them for a long time.
How did you take that brief report about Fizdale and the Lakers and LeBron and all of that?
I think the Lakers failed Luke Walton. Pretty blunt. I was pretty blunt about it at the time. I think the Lakers failed him in not publicly standing up and supporting him in the wake of all the nonsense with, you know, Lonzo's dad. I really felt like they needed to come out and say, it doesn't matter what this guy says. This guy's our coach, and, you know, any stuff he says in the future doesn't matter because this guy's our coach. And, you know, their claim was that responding once would have meant they had to respond every time. I think that's nonsense. I think they just respond once and say, hey, enough of this. This is our coach. And, you know, anytime this guy says anything, you can disregard it. I think as far as the stuff with Fizdale and LeBron and all that, I would say anything is possible. And I would say that if they think that hire David Fizdale is going to get them LeBron, they'll probably throw Luke over the side and that'll be that. And, you know, maybe that'll work. But, I mean, to me, I think that Luke is going to be there for the long haul, and I don't think that's going to happen. And, I think that, you know, the Lakers, you know, with him there, with that young team, you know, whether they get, like I said, whether they get any stars this summer or not, I think they're going to be in a position where, you know, they finally have a foundation of something, and, you know, it might not be as quick as, you know, fans in L.A. are hoping for, but I still think it's a situation where they're going to have a team that's going to be, you know, pretty good here in the near future.
Yep, I would tend to agree. The long-term rebuild to me has always been the smarter way forward. You know, this idea of just a quick fix, we all know, and we all have family, that one family member who always has some new path to riches in a week. and that to me was how it felt when Magic came in and immediately said that, oh yeah, LeBron's just going to come and Paul George is just going to come. And, well, he didn't mention any names until he did, and then was fined for tampering. But get rich quick scheme of going after superstars, when in my opinion they have the pieces to build a more sustainable, promising future right there. It didn't seem quite right to me. Thank you very much, Tim, for hopping on with us and taking time out of what I'm sure is an insanely busy schedule. Best of luck covering the Warriors. All of you who are listening, make sure you guys check out his coverage of the Warriors. It's really, really good, and it's really interesting, given how much Warriors coverage is out there. To stand out amongst that bunch of really talented people out there says a lot about what Tim's all about. Thanks for hopping on with us, Tim.
Anytime, man. Happy to do it.